Hi. Hi, Susan. It's Susie with Travel by Susie. How are you?
I'm good, Susie.
Good. I am so glad. Give me a second while I get all of our technology in order, okay?
Technology is the name of the game.
I tell you what, and what is the weather like in South Carolina? Because I've got news for you for Colorado.
We have had really pretty weather, but today it's not been terribly hot, but it has been terribly humid. Very,
Really?
very humid. My husband went out to take a walk and he said, "I think I'm dying." And I said, "No, you're not dying. It's
Oh,
just
funny.
humid."
I'm waving at a surprise. Anyway, so she's, whoops, I'll be quiet. I always blow it. I'm horrible. Okay, let me get this going. Susan, bear with me just a sec. I turn down my stuff. Okay, perfect. I got it going. So, hi, everybody. It's Susie and Susie. And I'm going to introduce our featured author tonight with a little formality. I'm going to actually read her book jacket cover to introduce her properly. You guys, I hope you enjoyed the book as much as I did, Bells for Eli. But Susan Beckham-Zarenda originally taught English for 33 years and now works as a publicist for Magic Time Literary Publicity. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
A recipient of several regional awards for her fiction, including the South Carolina Fiction Project, the Porter Fleming Literary Competition, and the Southern Writers Symposium. She's also published numerous stories and nonfiction pieces in literary journals. Zarenda lives in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Welcome, Susan. It's so good to see you again.
I'm so glad to see you, Susie.
Thank you. Thank you. I was just chatting about the weather. Any of you that are not in Colorado, we went from 100 degrees on Saturday to snow on Monday night.
That's just unbelievable.
And it's like really cold outside. So
Gosh,
it's
that's
pretty
just,
crazy.
yeah, weather is crazy.
Well, welcome. I just want to let you know, first of all, personally, thank you for taking me down memory lane. I didn't expect it as much as I experienced. What I did experience, Susan, is I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, and some of your descriptions just literally, I went back to Chamblee, Georgia, going to the Woolworth, sitting on the vinyl bar stools
Oh,
and
yes.
snack after school. And walking and riding my bike everywhere. And those were the memories that flooded back while I read your book. And thank you
Oh,
for that.
wonderful. And they were troublesome days in ways, just like we have some troublesome days now. But they were freer days in the sense that children could go out and ride their bicycles and meet at the corner and go to the drugstore and make a candy run. And I don't know that we can let children do that so much today, even in a small town.
Exactly. That's sad, isn't it? Well, it looks like we have a pretty nice size audience right now. I'm looking around. I have some people from Beaufort, South Carolina. I
Wonderful.
have somebody who I need them to give their permission to StreamYard if they want me to see their name, and that was in the very top of the post. But somebody is on from Dallas, and I have Janine from Austin, Texas. Can I give a thumbs up to my book club members in Texas? They are probably the
Yay.
most active. And here I am in Colorado, and then we are in South Carolina. It's,
We got weather everywhere.
I know.
All kinds.
But a lot of folks sent me some questions ahead of time, so I'm going to start
Okay.
with those. But I want to tell everybody in the book club, if you have a live question, please just type your first name in the comments and then what your question is, and I'll try to read it as well. So we'll get started, okay? One of the first questions came from my friend Kate here in Colorado. And Susan, she wanted to know what authors have inspired you in your lifetime. And she's wondering, I'm not quite sure why, you might know why, if John Irving is one of your inspired authors.
Oh yes, John Irving is one of my inspired authors. I Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving has been one of the most influential books on me in the last decade. I absolutely love that book. And Owen Meany is not like the character Eli because he's he's sort of different upstairs, you know, to start with. But there are, you know, it is a story about he's a child. I mean, my Eli grows up, but Owen Meany is a child who is compromised in many ways. But yes, I love John Irving's work. And obviously, I mean, my book is Southern literary fiction, and I was heavily influenced by some of the female Southern writers of the mid-20th century. Flannery O'Connor and Katherine Ann Porter and Eudora Welty, and especially Carson McCullers are some that I love and have read most of what they've written. Not all, but most of what they've written. And who else? Modern writers. I'm a big fan of Anne Tyler because I love domestic fiction. Mm-hmm. She lives, of course, in Baltimore. So it's, you know, Southern, I guess you'd say. Gail Godwin's books. She's a writer now. Lee Smith, Jill McCorkle. I love, she's got a new novel out, Hieroglyphics, that I have just purchased and am getting ready to read. So those are some.
Wow. You have a lot of inspiration.
Oh, yes.
That's one.
If authors don't read and don't read a lot, I gotta question it.
That's for sure. Another question that Kate had was, she felt that you had impeccable attention to detail without it feeling excessive. What techniques do you use to balance those tiny yet powerful details and being so concise in your description?
Oh, how kind of you, Kate, to say that. I don't know exactly how to answer that, except to say that if I draft a chapter, then I'll wait 24 hours or so before I ever go forward again, and I'll just read it and I'll just try to live it and see if those details are making the scene come alive for me, even though I wrote it. You know, am I living it? Can I be there? And that's a lot. So a revision, I guess, is the answer. And that's what I do. I just go back and I read and I think my way through it and I live my way through it and I'll make changes as needed. And yeah, you can, and I do cut things too. You can put too much in.
Right. Wonderful. I thought that was a nice question by Kate too.
Yes, that was so lovely. Thank you.
I'm going to hop on to a live question from the lady who helped me start this whole thing.
Oh,
Rebecca Bruff has asked a question.
Oh, Becky, hey.
Becky, yes. What's your writing practice like when you are actually writing? Are you on a notebook or typing? And are you working on a new book?
I write on a computer. And then, like I said, I go back and reread the next day what I've written. And I don't really advise my writing time for anybody. I think people should get up early in the morning and drink coffee and write. But what I do is I start about this time of the day, and that's sometimes earlier. I'll have dinner and then I write. I write at night. It's when my inner critic disappears. It's when it gets dark and there are no distractions. And my husband, a lot of times he's gone on to bed at some point, and sometimes he'll ask me in the morning, well, what time did you come to bed last night? Was it 1? Was it 2? Was it 3? And I say, I try not to look. I just, but I'm trying to learn to write in the day more, but I guess whatever they call it, biorhythm, is more, I do better. The inner critic lets go at night.
Analyzer, yeah. Did you see me lift my wine glass and say cheers to you for writing at night?
Yes, and there I have water.
I have wine here, so I want to be balanced.
There's wine involved.
Yes. Well, that's a wonderful question. And thanks.
Wine instead of coffee. But anyway, just as long as it's not to excess, right?
Exactly. Just a little bit. And my glass is a little excessive tonight, but
she asked about a new book, and yeah. I am working on a second novel. I don't know. I'm struggling with a working title right now. I'm calling it the When the School Day Ends. but it's a challenge for me. I'm trying to tell it from three points of view: a high school teacher, a privileged senior male in high school who's very, very smart, and a little bit younger, junior biracial girl who's impoverished. And wow, those three stories will collide.
Wow. Well, and you're, I don't want to give a timetable. You're just hoping to get that done in the next year.
I'm just hoping to get it done. I'm about 8 chapters in.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Thank you for that answer. Thanks for catching that. I talked about this a little bit at the beginning, and this comes from me. I just, in case anybody missed it, I was born in 1966, Susan, and grew up most of my childhood in Atlanta. And I just wanted to say the way you did your descriptions was what, like walking down memory lane for me, talking about all the Southern traditions, like the football games that, oh gosh, aren't our hearts breaking right now because it's not this year. But we've got to do what we've got to do. But it's hard for me to say or ask the question, you know, was that your memory too, or was that just your creativity when you got into the after school, high school activities and college? Did you draw on your own experiences, or was that
these things did not actually happen. You know, a lot of the things of going to a football game or going into the drugstore and meeting the new boy in town. But yes, the atmosphere, the times are drawn from what I know from my childhood. I grew up in a small southern town in South Carolina, Lancaster, South Carolina. It's really a small mill town. And so those scenes are, they come out of my understanding of the small town South in the 1960s and early 70s. Even if the plots are made up, the atmosphere is what I understand.
Right. Does that make sense? That makes total sense. Thank you, Susan. My friend Shoshana in Texas, one of my very active members, said, and I know the answer to this because when we first met you, I heard you say, but let's share with everyone. How did you decide on using Lyle for the vehicle for the lifelong consequences for Eli?
The novel is inspired by a similar accident that actually did happen to a first cousin of mine. He was a little bit younger than Eli is in the book, and he and I were about the same age, so I wouldn't have any firsthand memory of it. Also, his family was living in Plainfield, New Jersey, and my family, of course, was in Lancaster, South Carolina. So the knowledge I had of Danny's accident came to me secondhand through the years. But as I understand it, my uncle, my father's brother, was blowing up balloons for Danny's second birthday party and left a Coca-Cola bottle with Red Devil Lie in it. And Danny came along and picked it up as a child might do and drank from it. And Lie, I learned this through research, has properties like helium. So it made sense, you know, I guess that my uncle was using that. I guess he was putting the balloon over the neck of the bottle. So that's what catapults the action in my novel. But I didn't grow up with my real life cousin, and these two cousins, Delia and Eli, grow up across the street from each other, of course, and grow extraordinarily close because Eli is bullied and tormented for his disfigurement that's caused from the accident, the tracheotomy and the tube in his stomach that makes him smell bad. And Delia is his only friend and protector. Now, my real life cousin's family did move much closer to me when we were older. They moved to Charlotte, North Carolina. And when he and I were teenagers, we became pretty good friends, but nothing like Delia and Eli in the novel.
That's awesome. Thank you for that. This question comes from another very active member of our group, Melissa St. Clair in Beaufort, South Carolina.
Hey, Melissa.
Yeah, she says Eli was such a tragic character. She's sure that you experienced the full range of emotions when you were writing his story. What do you do to separate yourself or protect yourself from some of those feelings? Or do you not do that and you just roll through the course of it?
I don't do it. I roll through the course of it. And she's exactly right. There were times that, you know, I was emotionally sort of choked up, and there were scenes that were very hard for me to write. There's one scene in particular early on when the neighborhood boys are getting back at Eli, and it's a terrible scene.
Yeah.
And I honestly didn't know if I could write it. I knew it had to be written because something like that had to happen to him for my character to develop the way it did. Mm-hmm. But it was just excruciating for me. Yeah. And yet there are other scenes where I just had the most wonderful time and was joyous. When I was writing the scene, Eli's favorite song is Stairway to Heaven. Mm-hmm. And he and Delia are parked in a car when they're teenagers, and he pulls out his 8-track tape and he plays Stairway to Heaven. And before I wrote that scene, I went on YouTube and I listened to the song once, and I enjoyed it so much I listened to it twice. And I enjoyed it so much I listened to it three times. And pretty soon I was just living it. You know, I was back there. I was living that time. And so as hard as it was emotionally to write some of the scenes, it was just exquisite to write and go back and relive other things.
That's nice. That's nice. Liz Burkhart from Texas as well. I think, Liz, tell me if I'm wrong. I think that's right. Did you have the full novel planned out on paper in your head in an outline, or did the story just take shape while you were writing?
Well, the answer is yes to both.
Okay.
I had it. I was a teacher, so I'm a planner. So I had what I thought every chapter. I thought this is what's going to happen in this chapter, and this is what's going to happen in the next chapter, and so forth. And I got to the third chapter, and I never looked at the outline again. It just didn't. What authors tell you about characters take on a life of their own, and they lead you, and they let you know where they're going and where we're all going is the truth. I just, after about the third chapter, they just, Eli and Delia began to develop, and their lives, they became real to me. And I knew how the book was going to start. I knew how the book was going to end, and those things stayed the same. But the middle, it just took off on its own. Wow. Even though I thought it was outlined.
Wow. That's awesome. Which character, you kind of just led on this, which character and scene was the most difficult to write? She says she loves the reoccurring theme of the bells. Do you have a special love for bells? So this is two questions, sorry. Or how did you come up with that theme?
The hardest scene for me to write was the scene with Francie at the edge of the creek with her baby.
Yeah.
That was a very difficult scene for me to write. It had to be done because I had taken them there, but it was very hard. I don't know a whole lot about bells. I'm intrigued by bells. I love the sound of them. I started out life as a music major. I was a piano major though, and I don't know how to play the bells. Don't know a lot about them, but I am intrigued by them. And because of my knowledge of music, I decided to make Eli a musician because that's something I know and something I understand. And I don't know, it just happened that I don't know exactly how, but it just turned out Eli was obsessed with bells in all its forms. And bells, I hope, take on a lot of symbolic overtone, pun intended, in the book. Bells are a tribute for people. In a lot of ways, I see this book as Delia's tribute to Eli. And of course, bells ring for all kinds of reasons, both joyous and sad, as they do in this book. So they're just a lot of meanings, I hope, of bells.
That's beautiful. A question I had is, the novel is told exclusively from Adelaide's perspective. Adelaide or Adeline?
Adeline is what Adeline. I said.
Did you consider writing in anyone else's voice? She says that it would be interesting to hear Eli's take on his own difficult life.
I did think about it. And in the end, I wanted the reader to be as close to the protagonist as possible. And Adeline Delia is the protagonist. And I wanted us to be in her heart. And I considered, when I was considering more of a third person, and maybe omniscient and going into Eli's mind, I realized that wouldn't work at all, because one of the things about Eli is because he endured all this childhood trauma, he wants to escape his feelings. He doesn't want to think, he tries not to think. He one of the reasons he's reckless and rebellious is it takes him away from thoughts that he doesn't want to have. So I didn't want to try to go into Eli's head, because Eli doesn't go into his head. He tries not to.
Right.
So what we understand about the way he thinks and who he is comes from Delia.
Neat. Becky had another question. How do you handle dialogue and make it believable and real?
Just listen. I don't know.
That's a good question, Becky.
I just listen to it in my head. You know, when you've taught thousands of students, you've heard a lot of voices in your lifetime, and you've heard them up close and personal. And dialogue is not difficult for me. A lot of things are difficult for me, but in general, dialogue is not. And I guess I'm just able to hear. That's what I do. I hear them in my head, and I just let them talk, and out they come. I have a lot of problems with a lot of parts of the writing, but dialogue is not generally one of them.
Comes with it. Okay. One of our Facebook users out there said, Susan, as difficult as I imagine writing the scene was with the boys and Eli in the garden, I appreciate your ability to paint the scene without being too graphic.
Thank you. And I struggled with that. I did not want to be. I wanted us to feel Eli's pain and subsequently Delia's too when she comes upon the scene, both physically and emotionally. But I didn't think anything would be gained from being exceedingly graphic.
Okay. On that note, I'm like trying to, whoosh, no, just kidding. You know, Susan, I met you, was it just in May? It was May, right?
Yeah.
And we sat down and had a glass of wine at a nice place in Beaufort, and we had to worry about wearing our masks and social distancing and everything else like that. And the reason this book club started is because we were all locked in our homes, first day at home, and I was blessed to win a book club meeting with Rebecca Bruff. And this is where this all started. And then the tradition that we have of you authors referring me to another author has just taken off, where I, as a travel advisor and reader, could never imagine. And with that, I think I'm leading you to the part in our show where we introduce a surprise guest, and then we continue our conversation. So, Susan, I'm going to turn it to you, and then when you get started, I will bring someone on our screen with us.
Wonderful. Well, in my part-time job as a book publicist, I do a lot of the writing for a lady who owns Magic Time Literary Publicity. So I have had the pleasure of meeting in person and sometimes through email a lot of really fine writers. And Susan Meisner is a writer whom I admire a great deal. Hey, Susan.
Hi.
and discovered and knew of and had read before I became acquainted with her in this professional way. And that, you know, that's a wonderful irony. I had read her novel, The Shape of Mercy, some years ago, completely not knowing one thing about her. You know, back in the days when you would go in the library, you would scan the shelves and go, I like the way this sounds. Pulled it off, read it, and loved it. And Susan has written a number of books. And in fact, the book I want to introduce tonight is not her latest book, but it is a book I think is it's the next to the latest book, I think. But it's extremely timely because it centers around the flu pandemic of 1918. And it has really been revealing for me to see how people 100 years ago were handling the pandemic, having some of the same fears, same worries, issues that we are. And it's a powerful book. And it is called As Bright as Heaven. And before I tell you a little bit, that's the paperback that Susie's holding up, and I've got the hardback I'm holding up. But before I tell you a little bit about it and then let Susan say a few things, I'll just read a little bit about her bio. She's a very, very impressive writer. She is a USA Today best-selling novelist with more than, catch this, 500,000 books in print in 15 languages. Her novels include The Last Year of the War, which is her most recent book. It's a library reads in real simple top pick. And then As Bright as Heaven, which we'll talk a little bit about, which received a starred review from Library Journal. She attended Point Loma Nazarene University. And when she's not working on a book, she volunteers as a writing workshop facilitator for Words Alive, which is a San Diego nonprofit dedicated to helping at-risk youth foster a love for reading and writing. And by golly, I don't know anything better than that. So as I mentioned, her most recent work is The Last Year of the War. It came out in April of this year, and it discusses and propels a little known World War II event, which was the forced internment and repatriation of thousands of German immigrants and their American-born children. It brings it into our knowledge. It brings them out of obscurity, and it is a wonderful novel. I've had the pleasure of reading it, but I and just because of where we are in our world and with COVID, and we're still, you know, we're nowhere different than where we were back in April or back in March when Bells for Eli came out. I hope that so many people will tune in November and hear Susan talk more about this book. It's a story of a family with three daughters, Willa, Evie, and Maggie, who leave a small town and move to Philadelphia, where their father, Thomas, is going into the funeral business with his uncle. And of course, you don't get a setting more appropriate than that from the emerging of a pandemic. And I'm just saying, it is a moving, some of these scenes during the pandemic with these daughters, the mother, it will knock your socks off. So, that's Susan, you may want to say a few words yourself about it.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Welcome, Susan.
Thank
you. The three Susans.
I know. I'm having three Susans. I love it.
Triumvirate going on. That's great. Well, thank you for having me on to chat with you just for a couple minutes before we have our big visit later on this year. The book I wrote because I thought 2 years ago when it was 2018 that there'd be interest in this pandemic because it was the 100th anniversary. And the funny thing is that it kind of passed without a whole lot of comment. It seemed to be, it had been already kind of a forgotten pandemic. No one really knew much about it, including me. I knew so little until I started writing. I had no idea its impact. It was probably the second deadliest pandemic in all of recorded history, wow, second only to the Black Death of medieval times. And it might have even surpassed that, since we don't really know exactly how many died in that particular plague. But 50 million people died worldwide, which is a staggering number. Mm-hmm. And I felt like there should be a story about at least one set of people that lived through that time because of the impact that the Spanish flu pandemic had on our whole world. So I wrote the book. It came out in 2018. And funnily enough, the anniversary didn't really come into play as far as the book having any kind of like mention with regard to the anniversary. But of course, now we are living in our own pandemic, and suddenly there's much more interest in the path that we've gone before. This is not the first time that we've had a pandemic reach across the entire world like this one. And I think there's always lessons to be learned by looking at the past.
Yes.
And finding out what did we learn from what we experienced before. And just the idea that whenever we are faced with a crisis like this, it makes us realize how precious life is.
Yes. And it's also spurred me, Susan, to read about, like you said, it was almost a forgotten thing to read about the pandemic. I've spent some time now just reading about why people didn't talk about it.
Right.
And it was just it took apparently the medical world unawares, and they were almost embarrassed that they didn't know that this took over this way. But there are all kinds of, I mean, some of the scenes that Susan writes where they're wearing their masks and they are aware, you know, of how it spread and human beings helping other human beings through all of this. There are just so many parallels and it's a book we need to read. I've read it. Everybody else needs to read it.
I know, I'm so excited, and I wanted to announce, I mean, a lot of the books that we have read, Susan, have been debut novels or pretty new out there. What's exciting for some of our members is you can get this on Audible or other Audible readers, and I was happy to be able to download that the other day to when you're driving or doing other things, so I can be doing two books at once. I think that's what you authors must do, because...
Maybe three.
I don't know how you read as many as you do, but I look forward to reading it so much, and just to have, like you said, Susan, the parallels that we'll be able to draw from, good or bad, I think will be interesting. So the two of you met through your publicity company, right, Susan Z?
Correct. And I met her through her fiction, but then for real, we met because we are working some with Susan. So, but I met her before that through her fiction.
And I haven't figured out, Susan M., where, besides me, where do you live? What part of the country?
Well, actually, I live in San Diego, California, but that's not where I am today. We have a new grandbaby. So we are actually, I know, right? We are in Washington State today. I'm in my daughter's home office. And so we have a brand new 3-week-old little granddaughter. So we're up loving on them and taking care of them and making meals and just having a wonderful time getting to know Isla. She's a sweet little thing and a miracle in her own right. So.
Oh, how wonderful. Mm-hmm. What a beautiful name. I love that.
Isn't that crazy?
Isla. I-L-A?
I-S-L-A.
Mm-hmm. I-S-L-A.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's wonderful. Somebody, Liz from Texas, wrote, a fall of marigolds, one of my favorites. So I just wanted to give you that.
You.
And so let's see. I'm getting a phone call from one of my sons. It always happens, doesn't it? if he calls again, I'll step off. But I was going to have Susan M. If you could ask Susan Z a question, and then vice versa, just to share with the group. Any kind of question.
Okay. Yeah. So Susan Z, like, what are you reading right now? What is keeping you up at night, page turning because you can't put it down?
Well, I might happen to be reading your future book that's coming out. That's one of the books I'm reading, The Nature of Fragile Things, which will come out. When does it come out, Susan?
February,
mm-hmm. Yes. But I'm also getting into Hieroglyphics by Jill McCorkle.
I want to read that.
Oh, yes.
List.
What an incredible writer. And what have I just finished? My mind is no good right this minute. I'm reading, and I can't call up the title, by Patricia Averbach. Oh, golly. Oh, Resurrecting Rain. Mm-hmm. I'm reading that right now. And I'm sure there are others. But anyway, that'll do for now.
That's amazing. And Susan Z, what do you want to ask Susan M?
Well, since I mentioned that she has a new book coming out, tell us a little bit about it, Susan.
Oh, thank you. It comes out in February, and the backdrop is the San Francisco earthquake of 1906. And so the metaphor there is that some things that get shaken up, they'll break because they're fragile. And the nature of fragile things is if you shake something and toss it to the ground, it'll break. But not everything that looks fragile actually is. And sometimes you need to travel through a hard road to realize how resilient you actually are. So it's about a mail order bride who leaves New York City. She's in a terrible tenement situation. It's 1905 when she leaves, answers an ad, marries a man she doesn't even know 5 minutes after meeting him. And so into this manufactured happiness, she tries to build a life for herself. And everything is fine, except he's just different. He's not mean to her. He's not abusive. Everything about her life is perfect, except for that one little thing. There's something not right about him. And of course, when the earthquake comes, everything gets shaken up. And I mean everything, and nothing is the same after that. And I can't tell you anything more because it'll spoil it for you.
Yeah. that's the thing. You can get to a certain point. Mm-hmm. People ask me questions in Bells for Eli, and I say, it'll spoil it.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to ask a question of you, Susan Z, that you just reading along almost towards the end, and then I was just shocked. It was a shocking ending, and I don't want to give it away for people that are not finished, but based on what happened at the end, let me kind of just pussyfoot around it a little bit. I read something on one of your Facebook posts at one point regarding a house fire, and there was a connection, or there's not a connection to your family. Can't remember if that was...
There has been one in my family where that was tragic. Yes. Okay. Yes, okay. There has been. But it's not, you know, what happens in Bells for Eli is not exactly the same situation.
And it was way in the history, like long time ago, right? Okay. Yes. A long time ago. Susan M., how long have you been writing?
I guess my mom would say I've been writing since I could form the letters of the alphabet. I've always had a hankering for it. And in my early, early years, it was just for fun, just for therapy, just a hobby. But I started thinking of it as maybe a possible career in my 30s. It took me a long time to realize that this was more than just something I enjoyed doing in my free time. And so I wrote for a newspaper first and did that for 10 years. But I always had a hankering to write a novel. But I didn't have the confidence to give it a shot until I was in my 40s. And so, but I'm glad I finally got over my fear of rejection and just gave it a go, because I've been writing novels ever since, and it's my lane. I'm really glad that I found it.
And when you say you waited till your 40s, and I know, Susan, you waited a while too, I mean, what advice would each of you give to anyone that's watching that might be an inspiring writer? I mean, do you think it's easier these days to get published, or harder, or I don't know anything about it. What would you all say?
It's harder.
Okay.
It's harder in some ways, and yet there are more publishing opportunities now than I think there were when I was younger. I mean, I didn't try to write a novel until a couple of years ago. I wrote a lot of short fiction and had a lot of short fiction published. But I was one of those people who I just couldn't teach full time and raise daughters and take care of aging parents. I need long blocks of time, like 4 and 5 hours at the time. And I knew until I got that. And then so once I retired from teaching, after I worked part time for a few years, I said, OK. And then I got thrown into the world of authors with people like Susan. I said, it's now or never. And I was very, very, very lucky to get my agent, who is a remarkable person. But I don't know how I became so fortunate. But it's just a hard world to publish in these days. There are lots of people who want to. But if you know what I think. If you want something badly enough and you're willing to work hard enough at it, mm-hmm. and it's supposed to happen, it will happen. Mm-hmm. You know, it will happen. That is what I believe. Mm-hmm. you know, I don't know, Susan, what you think about the publishing process, but there are more opportunities, mm-hmm. but it may be harder to break in, but you don't give up. That's my
point. Right. Yeah, I would say it's never too late to start writing the thing you want to write. If you feel like you're a writer, you probably already are. You just haven't been exercising that gift very much. So just start exercising that gift. The more you write, the better you'll get, just like swimming laps in a pool.
Exactly.
And yes, it is harder to get published, but it's not harder to be published. You can be published rather easily if right. you want to self-publish. And that used to be kind of a bad thing. No one ever looked at self-published books. So that's no longer the case.
No.
And as long as you give it your best and you have it edited professionally and have someone professionally typeset it and produce a cover for you, you can produce a really beautiful volume and publish it yourself. But if your eye is on getting published, then do the work, start writing. Figure that it might take some time. It took me a long time. Most of my writer friends will say that they wrote for a long time in obscurity before that first contract came along. It's the rare thing for someone to get discovered overnight. There is no overnight success.
That's
usually
right.
there was
it
a
is.
Lot of writing.
And it so is.
The more you start writing now, the better you'll be at it and the closer you'll be to fulfilling what might be a dream for you.
And you know, something else, and it's because it's true for me, because, you know, I was a teacher for so long, even though I wrote short stories all during that time. And I got a number of stories published. I could never call myself a writer. When somebody would say, well, what do you do? I'll say, well, I'm a teacher. Do you do anything else? Well, sometimes I play around at writing. That's what I would say. I play around at writing. And that's wrong. And if you, just like you said, Susan, if you think about writing, if you want to write, if it comes out of you and you do write, by golly, you are a writer, and do better than I did. Embrace it and say, I'm a writer, because that's a very powerful thing in your psyche.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know it's a very powerful thing for those of us that read your books to be able to have this kind of platform and be talking with you. Because before I met Becky and you, Susan, there's this image of what an author is, and it's grand, and you are grand. And yeah, I would be proud of it if I could write a sentence with the proper grammar in it.
You can. I read all your lovely posts and everything. You do fabulous.
Thank you so much for that. I have a question again for either of you to answer. What advice do you have for connecting with readers or potential readers during COVID?
Oh. Well, we're probably in the same boat. So much right now is what we're doing right now, which is having these lovely virtual events. Mm-hmm. And getting to connect with readers that way. And I've enjoyed having virtual book club events, mm-hmm. even though I don't see them live. I see people on Zoom, and it's just like this hunger, mm-hmm. like, oh, hello, Fran, I'm so glad to meet you. Or hello, Mary, I'm so glad to meet you. It's like, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. I'm so grateful to see people, even if it's on Zoom, yep. to meet. And I've done some writing workshops that way as well. And that's even more, but we get to know each other. So mm-hmm. that's, you know, right now for me, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm doing some small live events, but for the most part, it's doing events like this.
Right. Me too. And I think that's one advantage we have over the crowd that had to weather the Spanish flu pandemic,
exactly.
is they did not have the connectivity that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I railed against platforms like this in the beginning because I wanted the real thing. You know, I had a paperback come out and my beautiful tour was canceled. And
yes.
I started doing these. And at first I'm like, oh, this is not what I wanted. But, you know, I realized really quickly that this is what we needed. Because it did keep us connected.
That's
and
right.
It's still keeping us connected.
It
and
is.
I'm finding out more and more that I'm enjoying these more and more. Not just because we have to, but because we get to. In fact, the other night I was watching Kristen Hanna interview Christina Baker Klein. And they're, of course, in two different states. about Christina Baker Klein's new book. And it was a lovely conversation. And I did feel like we were in a bookstore together. We weren't, but because they were talking about books and we were all wanting to be in that Zoom room, it was really wonderful. So this is what we're doing, is the way we're staying connected.
That's right. And, it's what we have. I mean, I think we would all rather see folks in person, and of course we would, but yes. And I've enjoyed watching a number of, you know, I'm looking forward to my friend, John Cribb's virtual book launch coming up next week, I think. That's what we have. And it's what we can do.
And it's good. It really is.
It's a good substitute.
It's not the real thing, but it is a good thing.
It is. And we would not normally be able to talk among Colorado, South Carolina, and
Washington
State.
Right.
California. We do have members from the LA area. And you know, I just a ploy to anybody watching, or a plug, excuse me, ploy is not the right word. A plug is that if anyone has some friends that are readers, that are in other places and you'd like to invite them into the group, it just takes somebody in the group to invite someone, or anybody can request to join. I'm just keeping it private just because there, you know, you heard about the Zoom bombers where people just hopped on Zoom rooms, and I just want a little bit of control there, you know, from my standpoint. Well,
and it's nice to have an intimacy like a book club.
Right. Right. Instead of hundreds and thousands of people.
Hi.
I'm trying to see if there's any other questions or comments. One is, in some ways, this platform is connecting us more broadly, what a gift it is. Melissa has said she agrees. She's had the opportunity to participate in online events that she could not have attended in person. I have to agree with that. And what a portable platform it is too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I was able to do a, my son's here. You want to say hi to all these ladies?
Some people come over.
Sure, people can come over.
Sick.
Cute.
They have to wear their masks. Anyway, but
and we get to be in our home seat, and we get to know the things about people we wouldn't know if we were in the stores or at an event venue.
That's true. That's
right.
True. What was I going to say? But it's a portable platform in the sense that I've done a book club from Oregon when I traveled there, and I'll be doing it again in South Carolina. We're getting close to our max time. Wanting to put out there in the for everybody watching, if there's any questions you want me to ask either of our lovely authors, please let me know, and I'll see, and we'll sign off in just a moment. So, as a recap, Susan Zarenda, your book Bells for Eli was a pleasure. It was a delight, and it helped me go down memory lane. And thank you so much for meeting me and participating. Thank you for setting up the independent bookstore. Susan, it's something, Susan M., this is something that we've done kind of just, it just popped up. We ask each author to pick an independent bookstore in your hometown or that you want to support. And initially, we'll do an order of your book through them. And then subsequently, people can get it elsewhere as well. But it's just an attempt to help the independent bookstore that they don't have the foot traffic that they normally would due to the pandemic as well.
Yes. And I'll give a shout out to my hometown bookstore, Hub City Books, which ordered the books for you all, those of you who are so kind to order Bells for Eli and read it. And I think it went pretty smoothly.
Yeah, overall, I think it did. Let me just... I'm going to ask each of you just to give one writing tip. This is something I've stolen from a huge book club out there that meets on Wednesday night, Friends in Fiction. Just one more inspiration, because I've had a lot of comments about people saying, thanks for, you know, inspiring me. So Susan Z and M, if you could just tell someone who may actually have a story in them or on paper, what writing tip would you give? Just a general one.
Gosh.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I guess if you've already got the idea and now you're wondering, well, how do I start? Figure out what your character wants, because every story is about somebody who wants something and they don't have it. And the quest then is for them to get it. And so the rest of the book is, are they going to get what they want or not? And you take them down the trail with some twists and turns, and you bring them close. And at some point, like toward the end, it's got to seem like, no, they're not going to, because we love that when we're reading a book. We love that tension. And then you have to decide, well, how am I going to give it to them? If I'm going to give them what they want, how am I going to give it to them? And how are they going to be changed? So figure out what they want, why they want it, and how you're going to give it to them.
Awesome. That's
you've great. Just given the arc of a novel beautifully in a nutshell, Susan.
I know.
That's exactly right.
Amazing.
I used to tell my students all the time, if you don't have conflict, you don't have a story.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is. And I, what I always say to people is revision is really writing. Yeah. For me, the draft is just something to get down there, and revision is where the real writing comes. But to give maybe a more specific tip, I think you have to be able to create genuine emotion in your characters. If you don't, if you cannot feel what they feel, and you cannot put their lives and their feelings on the page, then I don't know how your book is going to come alive. Otherwise you've just got sort of a surface plot, and it won't be memorable. It won't last. So for me, it's getting into those characters' hearts and minds and feeling what they feel and living what they live and going through the arc, exactly what Susan said, through their conflicts, until they either get what they want or don't get what they want, or, you know, they hit that wall. That's at least a specific tip.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I hear a little bit of the echoes. I'm not quite sure what's happening there, but sometimes the sound goes weird on these things. But I want to thank Susan Z and Susan M for joining us. And I really, your time is valuable. You're talented women. And thank you for joining me. I can say goodbye and then just do my little book club announcements afterwards. But in case Susan Z and Susan M are interested, the book we're reading right now is referred from Christy Woodson Harvey. She referred us to Kristen Harmel, and oh my gosh, everyone is raving so far about this book. So that's what we're reading, the book, the month of September. The meeting will be in October, and then we will read Susan M's book in October and meet in November. I think I got it right.
Thank you.
Complicated. Thank you so much.
And
lady.
I want to say thank you, Susie, for hosting me and for featuring Bells for Eli. It's been a pleasure to get to know you. And I'm honored that you have put my book in your book club.
Thank you. It was fun. And I will see you, Susan Z, in a week or so.
Yes.
Kayaking, social distancing is easy.
Can't wait. I usually have to kayak by myself. So I am so thrilled to have company to kayak with. We're going to be in Beaufort. It's going to be wonderful.
How fun.
Yes. Pleasure to meet you, Susan M. Thank you, ladies. I'll let y'all sign off. And then I'll
thank
do
it. Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Susan. Glad to see both Susan and Susie.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you, Susan. Hi, everybody. Wow. Another fantastic book club. I don't want to hold you too much longer, but I wanted to get some feedback from you all in comments. Are you liking this format still? At one point in time, people were asking me to maybe change it to Zoom so there's more interaction. Let me know what you think in comments. And Liz asked, will Susan M. be able to personally inscribe books? And the answer is yes. I will be working on that with her to set it up. And you guys, you know, there's whenever we do books, sometimes those independent bookstores will give us a little bit of a break on the cost of the book. But then there's the expense of shipping. And we all know the state of the United States Postal Service right now. That's why for Kristen's book, we went with first class mail. And there even was a little bit of a delay in getting them to you. So I'm glad you got them now. I think everyone has received it. I will always put in the announcements the very top of the the top of the Facebook group page, I will always put announcements on when I'm ordering books. And you may have noticed as well, when there's a certain time frame where we'll do the personally inscribed ones. And then after that, I have set myself up as an Amazon affiliate to make a little bit of change here and there. If anybody wants to use the link that I've set up for my Amazon store, that's another way you can order. But of course, the first goal is to support an independent bookstore. Someone says, I love this format. Sometimes Zoom is confusing because people talk over one another. You know, one of the things we can do though is as an administrator of Zoom is we can mute everyone and let the administrator unmute someone who has a question and they can use the little wave hand thing. You know, maybe we will try one of those in the future. And another question I had for all of you, do you want to meet more than once a month or is this good? Let me know about that as well. But I'm going to sign off tonight. A little commercial. I'm so excited to be headed back to South Carolina to Charleston and Beaufort with my rescheduled Lux Low Country getaway. I have clients coming from Colorado. Originally, we had some from New York as well, but they've decided not to travel at this time, which I totally understand. But I'm so excited to get back down to the Low Country, see some of my author slash friends now, go out kayaking. And my commercial is just if any of you are at the point in time where you want to take a getaway, I am a full service travel advisor and would love to help you. One of the things that is so cool that I'm finding out is places that are resort-like, when there is remote learning, people are going, kind of traveling like Europeans used to do or Australians, where you go on vacation to a destination that's delightful, do school remotely and work remotely. If you're inspired by that, let me know. I'm going to leave it at that. Monthly, everybody is saying is perfect. I will say good night. I'm glad you were with us for Bells for Eli. Ta-da. You're going to enjoy Kristen Harmel's book. And then after that, Susan Messner's book. Have a great night. Feel free to send me a message at any time. I'm always online, obviously. Bye, y'all. Thanks for joining me. See ya.